NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Cruz.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Gentlemen, I bet you're wondering why we are gathered here together. Welcome to a special live in-person edition of Air Safety Detectives. We have an all-star team here. Where to begin? What are we talking about in this one?
We're going to talk about your first impressions and Jason's first impressions of coming to the Aerospace Maintenance Skills Competition.
All right.
Otherwise known as the competition, where we highlight maintenance skills by providing challenges in a number of different areas, from engines to cockpits to composite repairs, wiring repairs, essentially 27 different areas of common mistakes or problems with airplanes. And we have 450 mechanics that are going to demonstrate their skills and their abilities to solve the problems that we have in a timely manner. And I've been asking you guys to come for a long time, and we finally got you here. And I would like to get your first impressions of coming to this maintenance repair and overhaul, otherwise known as MRO trade show, where we've had this event going all day long.
All right. Should we introduce ourselves first, or will we assume the audience knows us all?
We should introduce ourselves.
All right.
And before we do that, turn this. I'm gonna turn a little bit more towards you.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, everybody knows the Flight Safety Detectives.
Well, I mean, right. you guys need no introduction, right?
Right. We're recording. So I would say that today, the two people that we have that have not been to this event prior to today, Jason and Miles.
So I'm Miles O'Brien. I really know nothing about aviation. I'm just play a pilot on TV. So. But it is a living.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of people out there trying to do the same thing.
It's obvious you've read a lot of books, Brian. Miles.
Jason, tell me about your background a little
bit. I'm Jason Lukasik. So I'm an aircraft mechanic and an IA and an aircraft accident investigator and reconstructionist. So this is my first opportunity to come to this event, and it has been fantastic.
Right. So, it's a pretty extraordinary event, I'd say. So, John, you've probably been asking me to come to one of these events for maybe 10 years?
Yes.
Possibly, yeah. It's not that I was uninterested, I just didn't quite get it. And then today, you know, it's one of those seeing is believing moments. And when you see the energy, the intensity, the competitive spirit of these teams who are, in some cases, learning their craft, in some cases, are quite adept at their craft, and competing against each other, it makes me think about why aviation is so safe. It is filled with people that have such a pride in what they do, and professionalism, and care for detail, which if it didn't exist, we would be having a lot more to talk about, frankly, on air safety detectives. So this is, and Jason and I were talking about this, what this event is about the crashes that haven't happened and won't happen. This is about people paying attention to making sure that, you know, that nut is wired in properly and the number of twists is right and it's looped back through properly, or that, you know, when you go to work on a door, we've talked a lot about doors lately, that the slide is properly safe before you even get to it. Or when you go to work on a fuel tank, that you don't get in a situation where you're going to cause a hazardous situation for people on the ramp. On and on it goes. Just about every aspect of maintaining and repairing an aircraft was on display there. And watching those teams work together to try to beat the clock and do it, diagnose it quickly, fix it in an accurate way, and doing it under the time pressure was just fabulous. So, I would have watched it on ESPN if I could have seen it. But so I think that what you guys have created here is quite extraordinary. And, you know, I think young people should see this to, first of all, understand what aviation is all about, and also see these jobs. These are fantastic jobs. These are careers. These are jobs that AI will not replace. These will be the last human jobs, these kinds of jobs. And good-paying jobs, and we should have a robust way of doing this on shore here in the United States of America. And so the fact that you're fostering this, I salute you, and I just think it was really, really fun to see it in action. So, all right, Jason, what you got?
Yeah, it started out with last night. I understood the scope, I understood what it was, I know what this is, but it wasn't until I actually got here, until we saw 600 people in a room last night, introducing the teams and the hurrahs that were going on and the camaraderie that started last night. I mean, there was some good back and forth last night and just in the check-in process. And then being able to walk the floor this morning, being able to watch the teams, being able to see some really exciting things. Got to see some young people do some things I didn't think they could do. Which, Greg, and I observed one of those today, an 18-year-old guy just knocked it out of the ballpark in the virtual reality painting at the PPG booth. And immediately, American Airlines Tech Ops was right there with us the second he got done, and everybody was high-fiving and, wanted to know who he was and where he went to school and what he was going to do. And being able to see some of that stuff and watching the teams and the teams pumping up each other up, because not all of the team members are competing in every one of the events together. So the other team members are watching and helping, and there was a lot of that going on today, and a lot of filming, and it was really good. There's a really good spirit of the intent there, and everybody was working really hard, as quick as they could, using the instructions that they had, trying to accomplish the tasks in a safe manner.
But you hit on a key point there. What a great recruiting tool for the airlines.
Great. Yeah.
Watching that virtual paint spare, it was kind of mesmerizing. You were kind of aviation Van Goghs.
That's right.
Thing, and some of these guys are off the charts. And,
yes.
And so steady doing it. And to hear this high school kid being kind of hired on the spot, that's got to be what, when you originally thought of this, that you had to be thinking about that kind of stuff.
Well, it's opportunity. So that what we designed this for is to provide opportunity for individuals to show their skills in front of an audience made up of senior management of airline maintenance departments. And one of my favorite stories is told of this young lady from West LA College who was just graduating school, and I watched her go through a number of the competitions, and she just blew me away. And so I was over with the vice president, one of the vice presidents from United Airlines, and I said to him, take a look at this woman over here. So we stood there for a couple of minutes looking at this woman, and next thing I see his arm go up. And I don't really pay attention, but his arm went up in the air, and next thing, a manager for United, who I knew she was, came over, and this VP said to her, look, see that woman? And he pointed her out. He said, go hire her. And he went over and they hired her on the spot. And she happens to be here today, and that was several years ago. And she is working for United still.
I think this is a testament, Miles, to the fact that, one, the people that we saw today and that we don't see as passengers, and a lot of times we don't even see as pilots, and that is the mechanic, because they're buried in the hangar. They're working in the shadows. They're working underneath the airplane. They're working on the airplane. And without them, we as pilots don't fly. We as passengers don't fly. And I think that this type of competition spotlights those folks that don't get into the spotlight. Pilots are always in the news for whatever reason, good, bad, or indifferent. Airlines, you know, they are the face and of course the management. But when you think about the mechanics, they're always in the shadows. But without them, that airplane doesn't move. And I think this was just a great testament to, like you talked about, the passion, the spirit, the camaraderie that exists that people don't get to see. And John has been a facilitator of this for as long as I've known him, and that's better than 30 years. This is his passion, and he's grown this particular competition, and he gets all the credit. The fact is that he has brought this to a level that it's never been at, and this is an opportunity, not only for civilian, but the military folks, to be able to showcase their skills individually and as a team. And then when they decide to move on to wherever that is, whether it's going civilian and moving into an airline, or some of the civilian folks, you know, growing into an airline or a business aviation or a charter operator or just a mechanic working in a shop, this is a perfect opportunity for them to be spotlighted, because this is what it's all about. And I follow it because I mentor a lot of young people that want to go into the flying end of it. But there's a lot of young people that don't want to go to college, but they will go to a trade school. And there are a number of aviation trade schools that focus on maintenance and avionics and that kind of stuff. And that's nothing to shake your head at, that, oh, you don't want to do that. Right now, all aspects of aviation are looking for qualified people, because there's a lot of money to be had. Not just a pilot flying in the front end of an airplane. Maintenance people are making a lot of money now, and that's because they are in demand. And they're going to be in demand in the future, especially as we get into larger airplanes, complex aircraft, and of course drones.
You know, you raise a good point that I'm very proud of. All right, it's a military coming out. The military system of maintaining airplanes is different than the commercial system. And the requirements from the FAA are different. So one of the things that I'm proud of that's come out of this competition as it's grown is the fact that we now have an organization that will take the military people and go through their qualifications, identifying the areas in which they're lacking in meeting the FAA qualifications, and then help provide them with that training so that they can qualify and come out of the military and move into a commercial aviation position, which is, as Greg said, at least financially rewarding enough that they can support a family.
So Todd, you know, a part of this too is maintaining a reasonably vibrant MRO, which is maintenance, repair, and overhaul industry on our shores in the United States. And over the years, people haven't turned out for these jobs for various reasons. It's gone offshore, which is cheaper. There's a facility in Mobile I did a story on a few years ago, SD Aerospace, where they bring in workers from Asia on special visas because they can't get anybody to do the work there. This is important to have, you know, young American kids pursuing these trade jobs to keep that work right here on our shores.
And I see that as part of our job, that is getting the word out that this kind of trade job is viable for them, because as many of you know, the academic system in this country when it comes to K-12 education, it is very good for those who want to go on to a traditional four-year college degree. And it is very spotty when it comes to trade development. And this is one of those things where there are, in most communities, most large communities and many small ones across the country, there are schools out there who, right out of high school, you can be in there for 2 years. Many of them are subsidized by the state and local governments, where you can come out with little or no debt. And after 2 years, you'll be hired. You'll have a skill that you can take, not only in your community, but throughout. But getting back to this competition, I see this also as professional development for those folks who are in those trade schools. They might think, wow, maybe I should have gone to a big state U and go to the football games and all that. What am I getting out of going to this trade school? Some of them are getting the opportunity to see professionals years ahead of where they are. They can talk to them. They can ask them, hey, am I able to make a wage and buy a house in the city I want to live in? Is this company going to be one that'll be there around 5, 10, 15 years from now? And they can get the answers, not through us, but from people who are actually doing it. And then we have a whole trade show here, too, where they see companies, some of which they've never heard of. In fact, most of them I'm sure they haven't heard of. But they have the opportunity to just walk up, ask them about what they do, and figure out if that's something they want to do with them.
I would think most everybody we saw in this competition today, well, obviously many of them are employed, but the ones that are students, they're going to get jobs easily here. This, just by virtue of they're obviously among the best anyway to get here, right? But why don't you talk a little bit more about the competition, how these teams get here and how they compete and you know, how this all goes down.
Well, one of the great things that happens with this competition is the schools actually have many competitions within their student body, and the winners of those competitions are the ones the schools send to this. So essentially they are the best and the best of the school.
Right.
So they're putting their best foot forward. And I'm another thing that I'm very proud of is the mentoring that goes on at this conference. It continues after this conference between the old gray hairs like myself, or no hairs now, myself, and the students. I have stood on the sidelines and watched senior mechanics guiding the young mechanics, not only showing them what to do, cheering them on behind the lines and telling them what they need to do.
So, you know, aviation is all about mentorship and apprenticeship, isn't it? You know,
whether
you're in the cockpit or you're fixing an airplane, it's all about that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
The graybeards passing on their knowledge, right?
Yep. And we don't have a very good way of putting these mentor programs together anymore. This isn't the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. This is, you know, 2000s. We're in the 21st century where phones and computers and iPads are really the mentor for these kids, these young people. It is no longer that human interaction, and that concerns me. But when you see how the younger generation that's at this competition interacts and is respected by the older generation for what they do, how they do it, and how well they do it, that in itself is a sense of pride for these young people to think, you know what, I can play in this arena. I can do great things. I can accomplish great things. That in and of itself is a motivator. And John is brought to this, and I think that this is another testament to his passion, is we've had a number of all-women teams are competing. They're not intermixed. They are all-women teams, and they have been very successful, and they are very impressive. And one of the teams came from United Airlines, and they have been, you know, top-tier winners in this competition for several years. They have the same passion, the same drive, the same skill sets, and in some cases, better skill sets than their counterparts that are men. And it's entertaining to watch. It's fun to watch, and you can't help but get emotionally involved cheering all of these folks on.
It's a pretty diverse group of people, isn't it?
And it is.
Who are the people that are attracted to it, do you think? What is it that brings somebody to this field?
Well, it's a lot of different fields. So some of the people who live in more rural portions of the country where they've already been working on equipment, you know, almost farm people that have equipment, you know, lawnmowers, riding lawnmowers, big lawnmowers, where they've worked on it. So they've already developed some of the hand-eye coordination that comes with it. But we're also finding young people that have been in computers. And I tell them, when I go to school, I talk to them, the kids, about it. You like working on computers? an airplane today is nothing but one great big computer. And I forget the number of how many mini computers Airbus has on their airplanes, but it's in the hundreds. So if you're into electronics, these airplanes are just stuffed full of electronics from nose to tail. And we need people who understand electronics. You know, and really, the things that are gone from the old days is we don't have engine problems like we used to. Right? Engines, I remember years, not that many years ago, that one of the airlines that
wasn't
I
wasn't that about
for,
the time of the Wright brothers?
Yeah, it was just a few years ago, John.
Yeah. That would be it.
But we had an engine on wing on an airplane for 18,000 flight hours. And they ended up taking it off wing, not because it had a problem, but because they said, we've never had one go 18,000 hours, so they took it off the...
Did they put it on a stand to see how much more it would go? I mean, just to see? That's a stunning thing, right?
Right.
It really is.
So the engines have really become very reliable. So you're not... Engine people have become less important, is what I'm trying
really?
To say.
Wow.
And the avionics people have become more, because now how do we control our engines today? We don't control them mechanically. We have what's a FADEC, which is electronic control of the engines. Just like your car, they're electronically controlled today. So a lot of things have changed.
And hey, you know, it's like, who are the best drone pilots? Video game guys, yeah. Right? You know, right? They're the ones. So it's a different thing. Jason, when you were coming up, I'm curious, you know, because, you know, pilots always talk about, oh, I looked up in the sky, I always wanted to be a pilot. For mechanics, is it like I look up at the sky, I really want to figure out how to fix that? Was it always like in your blood that way?
Yeah, I always had a real mechanical background, racing motorcycles and four-wheelers and three-wheelers. I kind of came up through that. And then, you know, my start, I actually got my start working with an old gentleman that I worked with at Delta Airlines. I got my start in crop dusters. Really old crop dusters. So I kind of, you know, he's like, hey, you need to come on out and check this out. If you're really interested, we got like a whole fleet of crop dusters and we always need help. And so I went out and got started that way. And I was really interested in because I needed a lot of work. and it was fun. I thought, you know what, this is actually really cool. I think I'm going to continue on with this.
John, I never asked you, how did you fall into it? Did you always want to do this?
You know, actually, I started flying when I was 14 years old. I soloed when I was 15.
Oh, so you had the bug.
I had the bug early.
Yeah.
I lived close to the airport back when you could get on airports, walk around. In fact, I often tell the story that when I was like in the fifth or sixth grade, riding my bicycle down to the airport to watch the airplanes, I learned that if I got some hardware from the mechanics that were working at Northeast Airlines back then, I don't know what those nuts were, but they didn't come loose. I now know that they're self-locking nuts. Right? But in those days, your bicycle, the nuts came loose, the wheels wobbled. Right? But I knew that if I could get these guys to give me some hardware and to put those nuts on my bike, it didn't come loose. So
That's a good characterization of yourself. You were a self-locking nut. That's for damn. That's for darn sure, there, John.
If you
want, a few screws loose, but self-locking nuts for sure.
Where does this go from here? Do you think? I mean,
well, we just announced
it gets bigger and better every year. More competition. If I were the airlines, I would subsidize this to the hilt because I think it's a fabulous way to get sharp people.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yeah, they've been stingy. Some airlines have been stingy. But we have 90 teams here competing. It's the largest ever. As we mentioned United a few times and the other airlines, but you know what, there's one major airline here that's recruiting that they have a 5-step employment process. And they have come out and announced that if you compete here, you go to drug testing and final interview.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
Point of pride, huh?
Yeah.
That's
great. Yes.
Yeah.
Because they know what it takes to get here.
Wow, that's really great. So, I mean, so John, this came, you know, on the back of a napkin for you, what, 20 years ago?
A long time ago, yes.
Yeah, and to get to that point, that's something. But If anybody knows John Dolan knows he's a persistent son of a gun. Asking us to come here for 10 minutes.
I know, really.
He never takes no for an answer. He just keeps coming at you.
That's right. Yep.
Yep. Well, you gotta be persistent. You gotta get drive to what you believe. And I believe for a long time that this was worth the effort.
All right, so let's philosophically here. You know, the analogy I would come up, you know, I'm from the TV biz. Anchors get all the credit. Pilots get all the credit in aviation. Why is it that, you know, this group doesn't get the praises it deserves? It's just because we don't see them? They're not, you know, there's no white scarf, there's no, what is it?
They just do my job, leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know, see problem, fix problem, next problem, is the way sometimes they say it.
Yeah.
You know, we just always, that's the way I was. Right? And I broke out of that some years ago, but I was the same way. Just, you know, I came to fix the airplane. What do you got for me tonight? What's the pilot write-ups? Right? And we'll fix them.
I think the concern now is that in the news lately, we've had issues. Tires falling off airplanes, big airplanes, engine cowlings opening up, you know, a variety of other maintenance-related issues. And they go, what's going on with the airlines? What's going on with the mechanics? You know, and that kind of thing. When you see these isolated events, and they are isolated events, you can't really systematically bring them together like, again, what's been happening with Boeing and all of their systematic issues and that kind of stuff. But when you look at what a mechanic does in their daily job working for an airline, and you think about just today, we heard that American Airlines puts 6,000 flights in the air a day. Now you multiply that by all the other airlines just here in the United States. That is a lot of airplanes moving in these United States. And without mechanics keeping those airplanes airworthy and sound, we don't have 30 to 40,000 airplanes flying around every single day in the United States. And when you look at it around the world, that number is doubled. So it is a testament to the fact that, yes, in every business you're going to have these little one-offs. But this is not a systemic problem. And if it is a systemic problem, we have stopgaps in place. Because when you look at our safety system here in the United States, when was the last major accident we had here in the United States where more than 50 people were killed in a large airplane? You have to go back all the way to 2001. That's how safe our system is. And so while, yes, we have high visibility, one-off type events, the fact is we have the safest system in the world. And it starts on the ground, under the wing, in a hangar.
And it also starts with folks who investigate accidents. And of course, many of you know that Greg and John spent years at the NTSB investigating accidents, both large and small. And myself, my background was also in safety, doing a lot of analysis of large and small aircraft accidents around the world and understanding what are the pieces that come together for an accident to happen. And clearly maintenance has a role sometimes in that. And understanding the role that maintenance plays, as well as the other parts of the system, was key for me to understand just how important this competition was. So when 10, 12 years ago, when John asked me, hey, Todd, I got this thing, you want to get involved? My answer was yes before we finished the full sentence, because we've been working together on safety issues for almost 30 years. Was it 95 with the AWACS accident up in Alaska was where we first started coming together. So this is just an outgrowth of years-long, study and work in the safety business.
So all those incidents are isolated, that's true, but a through line you could point to is aviation post-pandemic, whether it's in the control tower or in the cockpit or in the cabin or people repairing the aircraft. There's been a lot of smart people who have left, a lot of experience. It's a brain drain because of the circumstances. It seems to me what's happening here is a big part of trying to fill that gap. But I wonder, you know, when you put together all those deficiencies. Is the system, you know, blinking red, blinking yellow? How concerned should we be about where we are right now? There's, you know, we built a system. There's this layer upon layer of redundancy, defense in depth, Swiss cheese, choose your metaphor, whatever you like. And are we at a point now where we might be closer to something bad happening, to that remarkable record going away, or not?
I want to comment. I want to make a comment about what you said about the brain drain, and that it's clearly has occurred. A lot of people left this industry at the pandemic and went away. But guess what? A lot of the people that left out, or some of the people that left during that period of time, you saw up on the floor today, because I get people that retired, those in that groove, they're up here working with the kids. And just tonight, when I was leaving the floor to come here, I had two people come up to me and said, I'm retiring this year, I wanna come and be part of this program.
And sometimes the things that keep people from getting into the business as young people are so simple to solve. For example, a lot of programs actually support people going through to get their education to be a mechanic, but they don't cover the test that you have to pass at the end with the FAA. We're talking about a $175 test. And for a lot of families, a lot of individuals, that keeps them from finishing. They've gone through the 2 years or so of training, and they stopped there. So one of the things that John put together was, within this organization, a scholarship program specifically designed to cover the cost of that test. And anything that the industry can do to take away tiny roadblocks like that, please help.
And when you look at, I mean, I've changed a career. I left the NTSB. He left the FAA. Todd, well, we don't know what Todd's done. Or where he's left.
Thank God it's your turn. It's your turn.
I'm just a TV guy.
and we know where John's come from and probably where he's going. The fact is that I think all of us collectively believe that we have to give back to this generation coming up, because without us, and not I'm not just talking about us, but folks like us who have retired with all this experience, we owe it to that generation who does have a passion, who does have an interest, to foster that and nurture it. And the only way they're going to get it is if we spend the time with them to do it. You can't just say, go read this book, go watch this movie, go watch this YouTube. That's not going to get it. There has to be live interaction. And that's what you see at this competition between the older generation and that newer generation. Is that interpersonal contact. That's what's the driver, because they see where we've been, where we've come from, and now it's their turn to do the same thing.
Jason, do you feel the same responsibility?
Absolutely. And you know, that kind of what, to follow up on what Todd said earlier, I had that exact conversation with a university instructor today, a college instructor today. And him and I were talking about it because he wants me to come down and give some presentations at the class. And he's really interested in understanding the dynamic between when mechanics make mistakes and how they cause, you know, serious and fatal accidents. And that's part of the things that we do with universities and that I had done before. And so as part of that, I was asking about his I specifically asked him about his graduation rate. He has a lot of students coming through. And he specifically, totally addressed exactly what Todd said. He has students that are, you know, that can barely get through the programs financially. And when they get to the end, they get right to the end and they can't afford the, you know, to take the knowledge test and can't afford to take the orals and the practicals that come along with it, paying for the end of it. So he kind of mentioned that, you know, we talked about it for about 20 minutes. He was telling him about some, you know, and he's running in anywhere between 30 and 40% of his classes have financial problems at the end for jump starting into the career. And he says a lot of them get picked up with auto shop. They go to other places. He said one of the places that comes and hires his guys is Six Flags. Six Flags comes for maintenance to hire his guys when they get through the program for some of the ones. And I said, well, that's, you know, I would think the university, you know, the college, you know, is going to help. And they're looking at different ways of doing that. And kind of part of what John's trying to get the scholarships and the grants, but some of his students. And I watched his teams today. I went out and watched his teams. His teams are great.
So we can't afford to lose that kind of talent.
We don't want to lose those people.
That's
we don't
right.
want
yeah.
those people. fixing a ride at Six Flags when they could be
go
fixing
fix the ro- yeah, find
that's
somebody
right.
to go fix the roller coaster.
That's
I want
right.
them fixing my airplane.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want those yeah. people under my wing.
Well, you know, let me tell you, this competition here, we got 90 teams. We opened up the competition for sign-ups, and within 3 or 4 weeks, all spots were gone. And at the end of the day, we had another, well, we stopped counting at 23. We think the final number was more around 30 schools that we could not accommodate. And that boiled my blood for months. And I said, I can't do this. I can't let these kids down. So we made a decision just within the last few weeks. We're going to go with two other conferences, two other conventions, trade show type things. One is the National Business Aviation Association. The other is the Helicopter Association. And we're going to expand so that we can bring those teams in. And that's going to happen this year. I'm not waiting any longer. I'm old. I'm not going to wait.
It's about darn time you admit that.
Oh, don't get in my way, because we're going.
I have no doubt that you're going to follow through on that. I got to say a word here. Having, I've always been a big admirer of yours, but to see this thing in action, I salute you, John Galeo. You are a giant in this industry, and you are a mentor and a godfather to a lot of young people who owe their careers to you. And I thank you.
And it's funny because you see it every day, like we did today. He knows everybody. They all come up and give him a hug because they all know that it's because of him that they are where they are. Salute. Great.
Thank you.
Cheers. And that, I guess, we got that. There's nothing we can do to top that. Let's call it quits for this special edition, live and in person from Chicago, of Air Safety Detectives. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for checking out our show. We really value our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you and how much you like it. So please give us 5 stars in your podcast platform.
We want to keep in contact with you. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're on YouTube, we're really working on growing the channel, and it helps if you all send in comments. Please do that, and we read all the comments.
And be sure to subscribe. Remember, if you're in the market for aviation insurance, you can save 5% with Avemco just by mentioning our show. Visit them at www.avemco.com. That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detective. Until the next episode, fly safe.